Hello. So like she said, I have the honor of serving as study coordinator under Dr. Emily Spence-Almiger, who's in our audience today, for this study. This was a community-based service learning research project, and a lot of people came together to make it happen. It wasn't funded. It was we used volunteers, we used students as a part of a service learning project to make it happen. As a collaborative effort. I have no relationships disclosed. I'm going to add that in there. All right. So what we were doing was we were trying to look at homeless women's experience with violence and victimization during the time that they're homeless and the health implications. And so we did 150 total face-to-face interviews with and our survey questions included closed and open-ended questions. So we collected quantitative and qualitative data. And it was in two phases. We started off in the pilot study and kind of tweaked some things and added some other sections. We'll go into that whenever we go to the results. We were sampling from emergency shelters in the area. We had three different shelters that agreed to participate. So who are these women that we talked to? The racial distribution was consistent with what is found in our homeless census in the area. The average participant was 43 years old and was homeless for 2.1 years in her most recent episode of homelessness. And the average participant became homeless for the first time at age 34, which is interesting to note that these women had lives before they were homeless, and they became homeless at 34 on average. 75% reported a high school or a lower level of education. So getting into the findings, not only did we find that they were being victimized, but that they were being victimized at pretty alarming rates. When you look at how many reported any abuse or victimization, 60.7%. 50.7% reported verbal abuse, control, or threats. Physical or sexual violence, 46% of the women had experienced in the past 12 months. During the time they've been homeless. Another one that just astounds me is 17.3% reported a rape meeting the legal definition in Texas, and that is in, again, we are only looking in the prior 12 months. So whenever we look at these numbers, especially when we compare it to nationally representative samples, it puts it into perspective of how high these rates are. We compared to the National Crime Victimization Survey and the National Intimate Partner and Sexual Victimization Survey, which we also used to help us create our survey so we could have a little bit of comparison. For example, if you look at the bottom, the figure for rape, 17.3 in our study versus 1% and 0.9% in the other studies. So it's a pretty striking difference. So these acts of violence and victimization were pretty severe. 29% of women reported at least one form of severe violence, including being shot at or stabbed, forced oral, anal, or vaginal sex, being threatened with a weapon, or being punched, kicked, choked, or beaten. And it's also important to note that not only were these happening in alarming rates, but they were recurrent acts. So when we look at the abuse, you see for the majority of the women, these things were happening several times or many times for being followed, harassed, or stalked, verbally abused, or being threatened that someone would kill you. These are things that they were encountering multiple times. And also, you see the same thing with the violence. So not only was it just one episode of being punched or kicked or choked or beaten, but for example, 47% of the women said that this had happened several times or many times. We also asked them where the victimization had occurred, and it's interesting to kind of note where. For theft, it was largely half of it was happening in the shelters. When you look at sexual violence, it was 44.5% was outside or abandoned buildings or on the streets. or at multiple sites or other things. Other sites that were listed were a partner's home, so it was actually like a housed person that was victimizing them. And but moving on. So 23% of all the respondents incurred injuries as a result of being victimized, and they ranged from minor injuries like scratches or abrasions to deep lacerations, broken bones. There's some pretty severe injuries that were reported in our data. This kind of gives you a breakdown of the injuries that were incurred, that were suffered. And so whenever we're seeing how much victimization happening, we want to look at who they told. So the top people that they talked to were family and friends and police and healthcare professionals. It's kind of interesting to note that you think that we, as homeless service providers and people that work in that population all the time, you think that we would be the ones that are they're going to come to, but really it's the doctors and the police that are at this point where they can actually intervene. But 40% of the women didn't tell anyone about their abuse and victimization. And the most cited reason for why they didn't tell anyone was that they felt like there was no use or that it wouldn't do any good anyway. Other reasons that they talked about were that they didn't believe that they would be taken seriously. They were afraid of causing more relationship problems, and they were afraid of it leading to further violence. So when we looked at whether they reported previous experience with violence and victimization, we found that it was associated with having physical or sexual assault in the past 12 months. So those who had experienced child physical or sexual abuse or intimate partner violence or a prior rape in their life were more likely to have reported physical or sexual assault in the past 12 months. And a lot of women, whenever you talk to them, it seemed like they kept telling you, oh, well, I'm fine. I don't let it get to me. That's just how life is. But whenever we looked at, we used an adaptive form of the SRQ-20 to screen for underlying psychiatric conditions, we found that 67% of all the respondents met the threshold. And among those, they were 2.3 times more likely to use the emergency room in the past 12 months. And then whenever we look at the other subsets, among the women who reported abuse in the past 12 months, 78% of them met the screening threshold. And then when we look at those who reported rape, 88.5%. So they're pretty clear and distinct psychiatric consequences for the victimization that they're experiencing. In the second phase of the study, we decided to include some questions talking about sex trade. And we found that 1 in 4 women had reported that they traded sex for money, alcohol, drugs, shelter, food, or other goods. But for a lot of these women, whenever we talk about sex trade, it's important to note that this is not what most people think when they think of sex trade or prostitution. These women, for a lot of these women, their body is their only asset that they have, and they are trading sex in order to meet their subsistence needs. Whenever you look at it, look at the results, 1 in 6 women reported that they had traded sex for a place to sleep, and 1 in 8 women traded sex for food. So these women are trading sex not just for money, but just to meet basic human needs. And transactional sex, not only do we find that it places women at higher risk for victimization, but that it's also often preceded by victimization. You can see from the graph that it's associated with childhood physical and sexual abuse, prior intimate partner violence, and prior rape. That's consistent with other literature. So, like I said before, we had open-ended questions, and we won't get to delve into it that much because of time restraints. But so, this is one of a quote from one of the earlier interviews, and someone said that what we needed to do to help them was just listen to what women have to say. And they had a lot to say. We had over 1,500 lines of transcribed text in the qualitative data. And I picked out some really poignant quotes that they use to characterize their environment. The one at the bottom kind of just sums up a lot of what they said, that you can't trust anyone out there. And that's how they feel, and they feel like they are constantly have to be vigilant. One of the questions that we asked was, what do you do to keep yourself safe? So we were looking at their different safety strategies. So the most cited one was to be inside, whether to come inside at night or be inside during the day. Other themes that came up a lot was isolation versus relying on others, whether it's a male protector or trusted individuals. And one thing to note, a lot of times the male protector that they relied on was also their abuser. So I'm happy to say that what has happened since this study is that our community really stepped up and responded. This is a logic model. You can't really see it, but you don't have to read it, but working with the YWCA, they made some changes, opened some emergency beds to give women a place to stay that's further away from the other shelters, that they're kind of all grouped together in Fort Worth. They also facilitated community dialogue and inter-organizational planning meeting, and they helped they came together to make this logic model for homeless women's outreach. The Day Resource Center in our area was also able to get a victims advocacy program through a grant, and it's the first of its kind in Texas. And also there were changes to the daytime shelter requirements at the largest shelter there, giving women a place to go that's safe during the day. But the largest thing is that more integration between organizations that really weren't talking before. The women's shelters are communicating now, and there's integration of services. Even the homeless clinic that we do with the school is using things like the victims advocacy program, so there's a lot more integration now, getting people talking about what's happening. Okay, and that's our contact information. So thank you.